listening to the Bi Sci-Fi Podcast. I'm your host, Carrie Pack, and this is your home for queer positive speculative fiction. Welcome back to the Bi Sci-Fi Podcast. My guest for this episode is Amara Lynn. They are the author of Into the Deep, a gay pirate merman fantasy romance adventure. And I wanted to say all of that because it fascinated me. Welcome, Amara. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit more about Into the Deep. So yeah, that's a pretty broad description, but also very specific.
Yeah, so there's kind of a lot going on there, but what I was going for is just a fun pirate adventure. I've really loved pirates ever since I was really young, back when the first Pirates of the Caribbean films came out. So that's where I got the original inspiration for the main character of my book, Lamarck. He's got some of that silliness that, you know, Jack Sparrow has. Always almost losing his hat, tripping over everything. But, you know, whereas with Jack Sparrow, some of it is a little bit unintentional, but goes in his direction. And some of it is really just, he's actually clever. Lamarck is just, nothing goes his way. Actually, it's been brought up, it's really kind of funny that he's so unlucky, but he's still managed to survive to adulthood. So it's kind of ironic. But yeah, he's not a very good pirate. He's a pretty pathetic excuse for a pirate. And the story opens with him being kicked off his dad's ship after his dad's death. And he gets saved by a merman and he ends up on a stranded island and pretty much everything's trying to kill him. But he's also got a cute merman there to keep him company, so he's got at least one thing going good for him.
One tiny thing. That sounds really relatable, though. I can relate to a character who fails at everything, including the one thing they're known for, in this case, piracy. I can relate to that. Can you relate to that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it kind of comes from a little bit of myself, too. I've always felt like a klutz. Like, when I was in grade school, I managed to get hit by every single ball. When we played sports, it was just that I'm not athletic. And yeah, so I think it's really relatable too.
Yeah, that definitely is. I mean, yeah, I'm pretty darn klutzy myself, not gonna lie. Can't dance, don't play any sports, just you know, I'm a book nerd. I'm over here reading and writing books.
Yep, exactly. It should just keep us indoors. Unfortunately, he gets stuck with the outdoors. He has to make a fire, and which is not an easy thing to do. If you've ever watched the survival shows on TV before, I used to be really into those, and I kind of would always think of Lamarck when I watched those. I'm like, oh gosh, a fire is actually so hard to make, and these people make it look so easy sometimes.
Sometimes. I always would yell at the TV when I would watch Naked and Afraid, because I'm like, build a fire, you're naked!
Yeah, that's naked. The first thing, like survival and any of those survival things, they first say you have to make a fire.
Yeah, like I don't understand the ones with like build a shelter first or whatever. I'm like, look, you need that fire because if any water you find, you got to boil that stuff. You got to, like, there is very little water out in the wild that you can drink. So you better get that fire going, girl. But
yeah, that was a hard one for Lamarck, too. It's like, you're on an island, you can't drink the seawater, right. So he had to find a freshwater source and all that, and so that part was pretty fun, and yeah, you know, the here and there research, trying to think up what kind of wacky things I can put him through.
And how does the merman react to all that? Because obviously salt water is not going to be a problem for a merperson.
Right. So, I mean, Lamarck goes off a couple times, you know, and there's also a theme of language barrier there, trying to get the point across. It gets a little repetitive maybe, but, you know, in an endearing way, I hope, because the merman's just this really sweet guy who's like, hey, this guy's cute, I guess I'll hang around, you know. So he tries to help him, and he brings him fish, you know.
Yeah.
And stuff like that, and Lamarck finds fruit and gives him some of the fruit. And he's like, oh, I haven't had this before.
So. Oh, that's adorable. I like that it kind of sounds like to me a little bit of like, and I hope you take this as a compliment because I mean it as one, but it sounds very like fanficky, like the kinds of things that make like AUs really appealing is like that you've taken these people and put them like, what if these two characters ended up deserted on an island? One of them was a mermaid and one of them was a pirate. Like that sounds really appealing to me for that reason.
That's one of my favorite tropes, you know, merman and stranded and pirates. So basically I'm just combining all the tropes that I love, and you know, it's meant to be a very lighthearted, fun story. You know, it does have a little bit of an angsty undertone with Lamarck dealing with, you know, everything he had to deal with at the beginning of the story, so coming to terms with all that. But you know, for the most part, it's a lighthearted, you know, almost a romantic comedy at some points.
Yeah, I was on a panel at Ancient City Con this weekend, and we were talking about kind of the need for those lighthearted rom-com type of things in queer lit, because especially in the realm of like fantasy and stuff, because there's just so much of it is so, so dark. And I think what we get from a lot of the more mainstream media outlets, like on television and in movies, and it tends to be very bleak. And we talked about, of course, the bury your gaze trope and how that's something that we try to avoid. So did you go into it thinking, I'm going to write this lighthearted, positive thing, or did it just sort of happen that way?
At first it kind of happened that way, but it's definitely something that I think about in my fiction. You know, I think that tragic queer stories can be important for some people, but for me personally, you know, I don't want to write or read any of this bury your gaze stuff, you know, so it's important for me, especially in fantasy stories, like you said, since they can just be so dark. You know, I like low stakes fantasy, honestly. I'll probably write a lot more things that are low stakes fantasy in the future.
Yeah, I feel like I read a lot to escape, especially if I'm wanting to read fantasy or science fiction. It's like that's meant to be an escape. And so I feel like overall, take the queer factor out of it even. Like you can only read so much that just seems, I mean, the real world right now is so depressing. I don't need more of that in my life. Like, so I'm here for all the lighthearted and happy ever after kind of moments, because gravy knows we don't get enough of those.
Yeah, exactly. I'm all about the feel-good fluffiness.
Is there any feel-good fluffy sci-fi or fantasy that you've read or watched lately that you've really been excited about?
One of my friends, another indie author, Kaylee Simkiss, she writes some really great low-stakes fantasy, so if anybody hasn't checked out her stuff, here's a free shout out for her. But I love hers. They have fantasy elements, but it's about simple things like the character trying to get to their friend's wedding. Yeah.
Right. Rather than trying to like save the world or, you know, prevent an evil dictator from taking over or something like that. Right.
Right, exactly. Yeah, hers are really good. I'm very bad at thinking of recommendations on the spot, so that's the only major one I have for now. Another indie author, Jay Emery, writes some really good, just all of their stuff is super cozy. They have a post-apoc story it's not about, you know, any of this wild stuff happening during the apocalypse. It's just about two people that are just living.
That's wonderful, though. I mean, I think, so a recent podcast guest that I had, I was talking with them about kind of the same thing where, you know, apocalyptic stories don't all have to be about the world is bleak. Sometimes it's about the community that we build after, or the things that we do to get through, or, you know, or in this case, you know, people just living their lives, because we're not all going to be, you know, Katniss Everdeen, right? We're not all going to be at the forefront of like the revolution. Some of us are just going to be sitting here going, well, okay, I guess we just move on, right?
And, yeah, exactly.
And those stories are valid too.
And I think that's something that's kind of coming up a bit more. I've seen so many calls for post-apocalyptic fiction. I actually have another novella that's post-apocalyptic, and you know, it's not about the characters that save the world. You know, they meet, there's fluffy love feelings, and you know, they just at the end they say, well, at least we have each other. You know, they don't go off and save the world. They just decide they're going to get by together.
Yeah. And my last couple of novels had, I'd say, fairly high stakes. One was a horror, so there was a lot of murder. And the other one then, of course, had this time travel, like, conspiracy thing going on. And, you know, now I'm just, like, thinking, I just want to write some fluffy, like, FF, you know, some, like, sapphic, just cozy, like, enemies to lovers kind of college AU. So I'm going to just write it as a novel because I'm not into any fandoms enough to, like, write it as a fanfic, so.
Yeah, you know, my thing is, I do have things that I like, you know, fandom, but I've never been a huge fanfic reader, and I've actually never written a lot of fanfic, but my thing is I just create a ton of characters and then basically write my own fanfiction about all my characters.
Right.
So, like,
yeah.
Everything I have actually has an AU story probably sitting somewhere on my Google Drive.
Yeah, I do feel like a lot of authors, like, we have certain types of characters, like archetypes that we gravitate toward, and so then we just consistently write, like, fan fiction of that archetype. So we're like, here, let's put them in this situation and see what happens. This character's really grumpy. How would she react to this? Yeah.
Yeah, my big ones are grumpy people and cinnamon rolls. I think a lot of it's because I'm one of those people that's outwardly super nice, but inside is kind of grumpy. So it's kind of a combination of those two types.
Yeah, I'm a grumpy Slytherin who married a cinnamon roll Hufflepuff. So I totally get it. I'm always like, this is stupid. And, you know, yeah. Being married to someone who's just like, it's great. It's a great day. I'm like, shut up. It's not a great day. I totally relate. So what else are you working on? Do you have another something else that you're thinking of for your next novel, or you got another book coming out soon?
Yeah, I have a lot of stuff going on, really. So I have another one that's a series called Masks. It's a superhero villain kind of fluffy romance for the first book, and then you know, it's got some action type stuff in there, but there's two books of those right now. And then I actually have 3 and 4 written. My plan right now is rewriting book 3 during NaNoWriMo, because I've actually had that stuck in my on my mind for about a year, because I was like, I know there's something wrong with this, and I couldn't figure it out, but I finally figured it out. So the plan is that, and then I also have another novella I want to rewrite, and it's going to be a non-binary Pinocchio retelling. So one of the other things I like is retellings.
I do love a good retelling. That's actually not, so that's something else I'm working on too. I'm working on a short for an anthology of a bunch of, like, basically kind of like next generation fairy tales. So, like, they're like the children of, like, famous fairy tales, whatever. So because of the way it's structured, I can't even, like, reveal what character I'm writing about, but I'm really excited about it, 'cause it is totally, like, you know, I'm of course there's a grumpy character. Of course there is. So
so it's kind of like a Descendants type.
Yeah, it is very much like that. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun, because I think everyone that's doing it is kind of coming at it from a different perspective. And so there's, you know, some very, I think, straightforward fairy tale kind of writers in there. And then I think there's a lot of urban fantasy and, you know, me who writes all over the place. And there's a couple others like that too. So I think it's going to be a really neat collection. So I'll obviously share more when I can, but yeah, I do love a good retelling. And so I'm kind of tackling my first non fan fiction retelling, but still all retellings are fan fiction.
Nice. My post-apocalyptic one is kind of, it's not really a retelling per se, but it's, heavily inspired by Romeo and Juliet. So it's got some of those vibes, and like a few of my favorite scenes I kind of worked in there in a roundabout way.
That's great. I do love a good Shakespearean retelling too, because I feel like those, a lot of those are like screaming for like modern retellings, because they always turn out really well. Because there's a lot of good humor and a lot of good tragedy in those stories. But, like, I think the language is prohibitive to a lot of people. Like, if you didn't study it in school, like, there's a barrier to kind of figuring it out unless you see it as a play and there's really good actors doing it. So I love a good Shakespearean retelling.
There's so many ways to interpret Shakespeare. I went to a con, I think it was the year before last, with Austin Tindall. He's an anime voice actor. And he actually does a panel about Shakespeare. I don't remember what it's called, but basically he explains how Shakespeare is just nonstop sexual innuendos if you read it right.
Yeah.
And it just, like, opened my eyes. Like, I really need to go back and read some more Shakespeare.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, you have to think about it. Like, at the time, Shakespearean theater was kind of the lowbrow humor of the day. It only became classic because we, you know, put this, like, put it up on a pedestal. But honestly, it was like, I don't know, it was like watching the Keeping Up with the Kardashians. Like, it was the thing you did because it was the most entertaining, ridiculous thing you could go do. And the fact that I think William Shakespeare would be just absolutely blown away that we study it in school and like pick it apart for all this deep meaning. And he's like, that was a dick joke. Like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like you never think about that stuff. I'm honestly not the type of person who likes delving into picking apart stories. I didn't think I would ever be a writer because when I was in high school, once I got to AP Lit, and they were like, okay, let's read Catcher in the Rye. Like, okay, I'll read this summer reading. It's like, okay, this is a pretty good book. And then we get into class and they start talking about it. And they said, okay, we're going to dissect the scene where he's sitting at the carousel and how this really is a symbolism for how his life is flashing by and his childhood is over. Like, really? He's just watching a carousel.
Right.
What are you talking about?
Oh, my favorite was when we read Grapes of Wrath, comparing Jim Casey to, he was a Christ figure, and that could be proven because his initials were JC. I mean, you talk about your stretches, but yeah, I think there's a lot of that happens to us in school, like where we get these things ruined for us, because there is something to be said for if you read into something, and like we talk a lot, I think, about in the queer community about like this character is coded as queer, right? And so that coding, and whether or not that author intended it, I think it's a very powerful thing for us to read it that way. So there's a difference for me between like you sit down and you read a book and you interpret it this way versus you sit in a class and the teacher's like, okay, this is the meaning. And I love it when authors like shut down people who are like scholars of their work and they're like, no, that's not what I meant at all. And I just find that amusing because I'm like, we need to quit being so pretentious about it. Like, let people enjoy what they enjoy about their reading, you know, their fiction. Like every interpretation is a valid interpretation, even if it's not what the writer intended, but don't get arrogant about it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and that goes to the same, you know, not every story is going to be for everyone. You know, I think, you know, my story Into the Deep, it's not going to work for everybody because it is very tropey and not everybody's going to be into how comical it is. Like the majority of it, you know, it's 70% slapstick and, you know, 10% romance and 20%, you know, treasure hunt. So it's a really interesting mix.
But see, I love when we can categorize things, because there are people out there, and there are people that listen to my podcast that I know of for sure that are huge into tropey stuff and are going to be like, yes, this is the book for me, sold. So Amara, I want to thank you so much for coming on today. I really appreciate you chatting with us about Into the Deep. If my listeners wanted to catch up with you, say, on Twitter or Facebook, is there a good way? What's your Twitter handle?
So on Twitter, I'm Amara J. Lynn, and also on Instagram, same thing. And then I do have a Facebook page. You just search Amara Lynn-Writer to get to that. It doesn't have a URL because it won't let me make one.
Facebook is
the
worst.
And then my website is just amarajalen.wordpress.com.
Awesome. I'll make sure to put links to your stuff in the show notes as well as everything else that we've talked about. But again, thank you so much, Amara, for being on.
I really appreciate it. It was fun.
You've been listening to the Buy Sci-Fi Podcast. Find us online at buysci-fipodcast.wordpress.com and on Twitter at @buysci-fi. You've been listening to the Buy Sci-Fi Podcast. Find us online at buysci-fipodcast.wordpress.com and on Twitter at buysci-fi.